Tonight is a yontif, my personal yontif. I celebrate once a year. I don't say tachanun tomorrow. We had a big suda tonight. I fasted today. 23 years ago, we had a fire in our home on a Monday morning. You can read about it. There's a book called Einei Hashem. It's both in English and Hebrew. And the story's in there of the fire. And Baruch Hashem, we all survived it without any injuries, miraculously. Here in Ezra, in Matityahu. And since then, every year, we fast on the 6th of Shvat, which is the day the fire occurred. And we have a big simcha Zayin Shvat tonight, Masudas Hodah, and we read the story, and it's a whole thing, huh? My father-in-law, right. He was a. There was the door to that room where the fire was, where my children were, was stuck shut for months and months, and the kids could barely, you know, squeeze through it. And my father-in-law had come from the States, mamish, like the week before, and he's been there many times and saw the door, never said anything, and he said, "I'm fixing this door." And we didn't have the door be able to be open. I don't know how we could have gotten the kids out of that room fast enough. The fire spread, you should realize the fire spread unbelievably fast. Within minutes. Yeah?
It's not a wooden house, right?
No, but it was the house itself, the most problem was the smoke damage. The whole house was, and the smoke was so dense that anybody in there would have choked to death. But the room itself was burnt, furniture and everything. So that room went up quickly. Didn't spread to the rest of the house, but the smoke damage was unbelievable. The whole house was black, like charcoal. Okay, in any case, so tonight is my personal yontif, my family's yontif, following a bris yesterday, so it's a Baruch Hashem bin B'liayin Hora, week of simchas. Okay, I want to speak about Tu B'Shvat, since we already have another shiur before Tu B'Shvat, and what I'm going to tell you is, I think, interesting. Maybe a little bit different than the normal style here, but I think you'll enjoy it at least. Okay. Let me tell you something that I saw in a Sefer. I think B'nai Yisoschar mentions it, and that is the following. There's a connection between Tu B'Shvat and Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Shvat and 15th day of Av, based on the following. There is an argument in the Gemara when exactly the world was created. Was it created in Tishrei, or was it created in Nisan? Okay. And either way, it wasn't created in Tishrei or Nisan. Man was created on the first day of Tishrei or the first day of Nisan. The world was created 6 days earlier, either on the 25th day of Shvat, of Adar, or the 25th day of Elul. That's the actual date of the creation of the world, man being created either on the first of Tishrei or the first of Nisan. Tosfos says that both are true. Elu ve'elu, whenever the rabbis argue, they're both right. How could they both be right? How could the world have been created twice? So Tosfos explains that the world was created in Tishrei b'machshava, in thought, and in Nisan, in action. Now, the simple, I guess, meaning of Tosfos is that God, you know, somehow mentally created the world in Tishrei and then actually created Nisan. That doesn't make too much sense. What does that mean? He mentally created it. So what I think it means is the following. Very simple. Rashi, right away in the beginning of the Torah, says, "V'tchila ola b'machshava lehiboros b'midas hadin." God's original plan, his original thought in creating the world was to create it with total justice. No mercy. Total justice. And we'll explain in 1 second why. And then he added mercy. When he saw the world couldn't exist with just total justice, he added mercy. So that means that the world was created on two dimensions. One, b'machshava, the original thought, was justice alone. And then, l'maisa, the Rabban Shem added mercy. So the original creation wasn't in time. There was no time. that time was a creation. So originally, when God created the world, he created it on two dimensions, a dimension of total justice, and then another dimension where there is mercy. Two different worlds. And when the world was then put into creation, and time was created, those two dimensions split up into time zones. The time zone of justice was Tishrei, and the time zone where there's mercy is Nisan. So the Rosh Hashanah of the dimension of justice is Tishrei, and the Rosh Hashanah of the dimension of justice with mercy is Nisan. Now let me explain first what that means, and then we'll see how it fits into Tishrei and Nisan. And then when the world has to do with Tu B'Shvat. The concept is the following. Why did God create this world? He created neshamos, he created our souls, that he should be able to shower his goodness on those souls forever, because God wanted to do the ultimate good for a creation that could receive that ultimate good, which is him. He's the ultimate good. God wanted to create an eternal relationship with our neshamas. So he could have just created our neshamas and the world to come and have that relationship. Why do you need this world for it? Why did God create this world? The answer is that God saw that if we didn't earn that relationship and created ourselves, we wouldn't appreciate it as much as we could if we earned it and created it. So therefore, the Rebbe Shem created this world. He put our souls into a physical world distanced from him. And he said, you create the relationship with me instead of me creating with you. And that way, you'll have created it. You'll have earned it. You'll appreciate it. That's the purpose of this world. If that's the case, then the ideal in this world is that you earn it on your own. You don't get any help. Because if you get any help, then it defeats the purpose. The whole purpose was that it should be totally earned and not given as a present. The more mercy, the more that you get help, the less you earn it, the less the purpose of this world is fulfilled. So really, ideally, a person should be able to exist in this world with total justice. You get exactly what you deserve. No mercy. But if you do what's right, it's all yours. You don't have any help. So true, if you do things wrong, you'll get punished with them without any mercy. But what's left will be the reward of the world to come, which will be totally yours. God saw, though, that very few people could exist with that total justice. They would lose everything. So he added mercy. But that doesn't mean that he changed the world completely. He created two dimensions. For those people that could exist with total justice, that's what's ideal. And there were individuals in history that could do that. Yaakov Avinu was one of them. He was able to exist. Rabbi Akiva was another one. Rabbi Akiva was able to exist. That's why it says that when the angel said, when they saw Rabbi Akiva, his flesh being combed with iron combs, and the Romans were killing him, they said, this is the Torah, this is the reward of Torah. And God said, keep quiet. Kach also b'machshava lefonai. This is what came up in my thought. So the simple meaning is, it's my understanding, you can't understand it. But the way we're saying now, the Shaloh HaKadosh says, what it means is, this is my original intention in creation. It should be total justice, no mercy. So Rabbi Akiva is being paid for the few sins that he did without any mercy. But what's left is the 99% reward that he's going to get that's totally his. No help. So it's a reward that is totally earned. The Olam Haba of Rabbi Akiva is something beyond comprehension. So these individuals were able to live on that level. Very few individuals in history. Most of us need mercy to temper the justice. There's still justice. You still get what you deserve, but it's mitigated with mercy. Okay, that's the two dimensions. Now, the dimension, therefore, of justice, the original plan, gravitated to Tishrei. Tishrei is Yom HaDin, it's a day of judgment, right? It's the word Tishrei is the backwards aleph base, Tav, Shin, Resh, backwards. Because whenever the aleph base is backwards in a word, it represents din, it represents judgment. Just take my word for it. It's a Kabbalistic thing. Okay, I don't understand it either, but that's what it says. When it's the right way, it represents mercy. What's the month that Pesach falls in? Nisan, but it's also called Aviv. Aviv is Aleph days. the opposite of Tishrei, Tavshin Resh. In fact, Pesach, we know Pesach means to pass over, to skip over. But Rashi says, the Targum says, Pesach means to have mercy. God have mercy on us. So the whole season of Pesach is mercy, and the season of Tishrei is judgment. And that's what it means. The world was created twice, not two different times, but on two dimensions. It was created on a dimension of judgment, and that became the time of Tishrei, and it was created simultaneously on a dimension of mercy added. Both worlds exist simultaneously, and that gravitated towards the time of Nisan. Okay. So we have a creation of Tishrei, which is more judgment, and a creation of Nisan, which is when God added mercy. Okay. Now, next thing. It says that before a person's born, 40 days before conception, HaKadosh Baruch Hu already begins to prepare for that person what's going to be in the world with that person. Okay? 40 days, Kol Mitzirus Havlad, 40 days before conception, the Rebbe Shalom already begins to prepare for that person. That's the case, says the Bnei Yisrael. 40 days before the creation of the world, God already started preparing for the creation. What's 40 days before the 25th of Elul, which is the creation of Tishrei, the 15th of Av? What's 40 days in a regular year? This year it doesn't work out. In a regular year, not a leap year, 40 days before the 25th of Adar is the 15th of Shvat. So Tu B'Shvat is the 40-day preparation period for the creation of Nisan, and Tu B'Av is the 40-day preparation period for the creation of Tishrei. Tu B'Shvat prepares for the Rosh Hashanah of mercy, and Tu B'Av prepares for the Rosh Hashanah of judgment. Everybody still with me? Next, there's another similarity between Tu B'Shvat and Tu B'Av. They both have to do with trees. One of the reasons we celebrate Tu B'Av is because that was the last day that they cut wood for the altar for that year. That they had to cut wood and store it to burn on the altar all year. They cut it only in the summer. In the summer, the trees were dry and there weren't any worms. Wormy wood is not fit to be burned on the altar. So they had to get wood without worms. So they did it in the summer. Tu B'Av was the cutoff point, because from Tu B'Av on, the nights become longer and the days get shorter and the sun's rays aren't as direct and the sap begins to appear in the trees a little bit and there's worms. There could be worms. So they stopped cutting on Tu B'Av. So the seal, the completion of cutting wood for the altar for that year was on Tu B'Av, like we make a siyum in Eid Yontif. It represented the completion of cutting wood for the altar for that year. Tu B'Shvat obviously has to do with trees too. That's Rosh Hashanah, Le'ilanos. It's Rosh Hashanah for the trees. Except there's a difference between them. Tu B'Av has to do with Eitzim, with dry trees, not with fruit. With the dry tree that you cut down, and you cut it into firewood and burn it on the Mizbeah. Fire. Trees that have to do with fire, burning the tree on the altar. And Tu B'Shvat has to do with Ilanos. Why is Tu B'Shvat the Rosh Hashanah for Ilanos? Ilan is a fruit-bearing tree. And even though there's something called an Ilan Srak, which is a tree that doesn't bear fruit, it says in the Gemara that in the future, when Mashiach comes, all Ilanei Srak will bear fruit. They are potentially fruit-bearing trees. Just in this world, they don't bear fruit. So, Ilan means a fruit-bearing tree. Eitz means a tree, a piece of wood. It's also called an eitz. It's just the dry structure of the tree is called an eitz, and its fruit-bearing qualities is called an Ilan. So, Tu B'Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos, for the fruit that's going to come on the tree. And the reason is because the sap goes into the trees on Tu B'Shvat, the sap that was formed by the rainfall after Tishrei. So basically, what happens on Tu B'Shvat is the new rainfall goes into the sap. The rainfall from the beginning of Tavshin Ayin Aleph, a few months ago, that rain, whatever rain there was, created the sap that goes into the tree now, and the fruit that's formed from this sap is from this year. Anything, any fruit before that was from the sap that was created from the rains of the previous year. So this is the cutoff point. This is the new year for trees. Okay, so but this is water, sap, and fruit of the tree. The other one is dry wood and burning it, fire, burning up the tree. One prepares for mercy, one prepares for judgment. Now let's see how that works out. Let's start with Tu B'Av, and then we'll end with Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Av, like we said, is the 40-day period of preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of judgment, before Tisha. It's 40 days before the creation of the world of judgment, which was on the 25th of Elul. How do you prepare for judgment? So first of all, let's discuss what a tree is, and what the symbolism of cutting down a tree, cutting it into logs, and burning it on the altar. And somehow, that is a preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of judgment. Let's first see a tree. A tree is spelled with two letters, Ayin Tzadik. It's too bad we don't have a blackboard here. I don't think ours is a blackboard, a whiteboard, whatever it is today. Right? But it would be easier. But keep with me, and Ayin Tzadik. Those are the two letters that spell tree. Okay? If you take those letters and make them into words, Ayin means to look. It means an eye, but with two yuds, Ayin means look. Okay? See. Tzadik means a tzadik, but it stands for a tzadik. So the two letters of the tree, Ayin Tzadik, can mean look and you'll see a tzadik. Look at a tree and you'll see a tzadik. Now how in the world, by looking at a tree, do you see a tzadik? How does that work? The Torah compares people to trees. Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. Man is compared to a tree. Says the Maharal Miprag, that means structurally. We are structured like a tree. We have limbs like a tree. We have arms and legs. And we have a root, right? A bark, a body. And we have a root, which is our basically our head. So we are very similar to a tree, except for one very important point. We're upside down. Because we stand on our limbs and our root is up here. We'd look more like a tree if we're on our head. If you stand upside down, you look like a tree. Right? Your root is on the ground, your trunk comes up, and your limbs are extended out. Then we look like a tree. We're an upside down tree. Says the Maharal, why an upside down tree? Because trees are rooted in the physical world. That's where their roots are. That's where their main part is. But we're rooted in the spiritual world. So we're really not an upside down tree. It's just that our base is up there. So we're growing down from heaven instead of growing up from the ground. So the truth is that our root is rooted in the heavens and our limbs extend out. Trees are rooted in the ground and their limbs extend up. So if you look at a tree, and you see how it's configured. What's the main thing of the tree? What's the secondary thing? The main thing is the root. And that's what's in the ground. And the secondary things are the limbs. Because if you cut off the limbs, the tree will still live. But if you cut off the root, the tree's gone. So too a human being is rooted in the heavens. That's the main thing of him. That's where his root is. And his limbs are in this physical world. They're the secondary things. The main thing is not the physical world for a human being. It's the spiritual world. So if you look at a tree, you'll see a tzadik. If you look at a tree and you see where the root is and where the limbs are, and you look at a person, you see where his limbs are and where his root is, you'll understand what a tzadik is. A tzadik is a person who's rooted in the heavens, whose limbs are on the ground, but who's rooted in the heavens. That's a maharal. Now let me...
That's you.
Well, that's not me. That's a maharal. Up to. Now you want me, now you get me. Let me add to that. It would therefore seem... It makes sense, according to this maharal, that if we would be in a spiritual world, then we'd be on our head. The only reason we're on our feet is because we're in a physical world. So our root has to pace towards the spiritual. But in a totally spiritual world, we should be like a tree, with our root down and our limbs up. Yeah? That makes sense? In a spiritual world, we don't have to be rooted up there. We should be rooted in the bottom of the spiritual world like any tree. And I found a medrash that says that in Gan Eden, in the spiritual world, people walk on their heads. Where's the medrash?
Is it about the spiritual
world? Yeah, it means conceptually. It doesn't mean, don't get scared if you can't walk in your head. I can't either, right? You'll learn very fast over there. And secondly, it's not up, down, it's like space. There's no up and down. It's conceptual. Our heads are the root down, and our limbs are up, whatever that means. Okay, we don't have a physical body there either. But whatever conceptually it means, we're walking on our head. Our heads are down. That's where the root is in the spiritual world. Where did I find that? In a Medrash. The Medrash says like this, that after Akedas Yitzchak, Yitzchak Avinu, when he saw Avram coming with the knife to cut his throat, his neshama fled him. He died. And he had to be resurrected. And he needed to be recuperated. He had to go for shikum. So God put him for 3 years in Gan Eden. That's why it doesn't say that Yitzchak returned from the Akedah. He went 3 years into the Gan Eden to recuperate. When did he come out of Gan Eden? The moment that Rivka saw him the first time, she was on the camel, and she said, who's that guy coming in the distance? And Eliezer said, that's my master, that's Yitzchak. At that moment, the Medrash says he was emerging from Gan Eden. And the Medrash says, and is well known, people in Gan Eden walk on their head. And Yitzchak was still walking on his head when he emerged from Gan Eden. And when Rivka saw her chosson for the first time walking on his head, she fell off the camel. And somebody said, like you're saying, she wanted to be a good kala. She wanted to be just like her chosson. So she fell head first to get on her head too, just like the chosson. So the Medrash says openly that in Gan Eden, people walk on their head, which makes sense. In the following, it says when the Mechashefa brought up Shmuel HaNavi, he came up upside down. You see that, what's it called? There's a Gemara that says that somebody died clinically, fainted, and saw the next world. And he said, Elyonim Lamata, V'Tachtonim Lamala. There's all different explanations that mean. The one simple explanation to me, I saw over there, people were upside down. The top was on the bottom, and the bottom was on the top. Literally, in the next world, people are on their head. In fact, in Hasidic circles, mainly in by Lubavitch, they have an Indian by chasanas, or when they dance, to do somersaults, where they call regular mala, where the feet are above and the head down. And that is part of this idea that in a spiritual world, that's how you are. Your head down and your legs up. Therefore, because of that, in this physical world, we have to stand on our feet. You can't stand on your head, right? Because you're rooted up there. But it looks like your roots are your feet. So whenever we want to maintain a spiritual posture, what do? We uncover our feet, we take off our shoes, and we cover our heads. Why? Because that shows that this is really the root. Because a root, the root part of the tree is covered. The limbs are uncovered. So we could get on our heads, but that's very difficult. So in order to show in the physical world that really this is the root, and what we're standing on is only because of practicality, but really that's only the limb, we take off our shoes and we cover our head. When we do that, Yom Kippur. Take off our shoes, cover our head, right? Another time is when you're an oval. An oval takes off his shoes, and he says that he covers his head. Why? Because he wants to get close to the neshama, to identify with the neshama, wants to empathize with the neshama. So he wants to get closer to the spiritual world. He covers his head and takes off his shoes. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you were born upside down.
Oh, somebody once told me that too. Yes, the baby comes from the other world.
Yeah.
He comes upside down. That doesn't mean if you were born breech, something wrong with you. It just means that that's normally how it is, right? In any case, yeah, very good. So you get this gist. There's one time a year, though, or more, three times a year, when we can keep our shoes on and still be holy. There's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim that says the following: "Mayofu po'amayich ba'ne'olim basmodi." How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes, the daughter of the benevolent one. So the Gemara in Chagiga says, what does it mean? How beautiful are your footsteps in your shoes when you come Aliyah L'Rega, when you come three times to the pilgrimages during the Sholosh Regalim. Bas Nadiv, the daughter of the benevolent one, Avram Avinu, who was the first Geir, first convert. What does it mean? Based on this idea, I think it means the following. normally, in order to be spiritual, you have to uncover your your feet, which show that's a limb, and cover your head. But there's three times a year when the physical part of a person becomes spiritual. When is that? Shalosh Regalim. Eating, drinking, all the physical things become mitzvahs. So, during Shalosh Regalim, during the three Yom Tovim. So that's called Aliyah L'Regel. You're elevating your foot to a spiritual level. Therefore, you can keep your shoes on. You don't take your shoes off. You're beautiful in your shoes. Now, where do we get the power to change physical things into spiritual? From Avraham Avinu. He was the first convert. He transformed a goyish body into a Jew. So if he could change that physicality into spirituality, we have that power too. Three times a year, we take the physical world and we elevate it. Aliyah L'Regel, we take the regel, the foot, and we elevate it, and it becomes holy and spiritual. We don't have to take off our shoes, we can leave the shoes on. So that is the connection between a tree, the configuration of the tree. Ayin tzadik, eitz, look at the tzadik, look at the tree, you'll see a tzadik. How? Look at the configuration of the tree. This is the limbs, this is the root. In a tree, the root is in the physical world, and the limbs extend up. But a human being, his root is in the spiritual world, and his limbs extend down. So the main thing of the person is neshama, his mind, or whatever, that's rooted in the spiritual world. That's ayin tzadik. Now, therefore, when you take a tree, the wood of the tree, it has nothing to do with fruit, it has to do with the configuration of the tree, the limbs and the root and the trunk. You cut it down and you cut it into pieces and you put it on the altar. That is the symbol of how one has to prepare for judgment. We say on Rosh Hashanah, ki mi yitzvak badin, who could possibly be exonerated when it comes to justice? Nobody is perfect. So how do you merit in judgment? So it says, you give yourselves over completely to God. You say, God, I put myself in your hands. And I trust that you will make my judgment come out okay. I can't do it on my own. I can't say I deserve it. So I'm totally subjugating myself to you, putting myself in your hands. What's the symbol of that? Cutting down the tree, cutting into little pieces is total subjugation, and putting it on the altar is total subjugation to God. So that is the preparation for the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, is Tu B'Av, cutting wood for the altar. It's like cutting the person and putting him totally on the altar. That's the preparation for judgment. That's Tu B'Av. Now let's get to Tu B'Shvat.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why did the Rav say that there were only a few individuals
who can,
in history who were like, why can't we say that everybody who died with Kiddush Hashem actually put their own bodies on the altar, and that was judgment?
Could be. Okay. I'll go along with that. Okay. But it could be until that point they weren't able to be so perfect that they weren't. It could be, yeah, it could be the way they finished off their life, yeah. Could be. Okay, now let's get to Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat, we said, is Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanos. We're not talking about anymore Eitzim, the configuration of the tree, the wood of the tree. We're talking about the fruit bearing. Now I'll tell you something that once hit me when I was driving my car years ago. Look at the word Ilan. Take the Aleph and put it in your pocket. Okay? You're left with three letters. Yud, Lamed, Nun. Right? Yud is 10, Lamed is 30, is 40, and Nun is 50, is 90. What letter in the Aleph phase is 90? Tzadik. No, Kuf is 100. Tzadik. Okay? Now you have a Tzadik. Take the Aleph out of your pocket and put it in front of the Tzadik. What word do you get? Eitz. But with an Aleph, not with an I. Eight, Elan is Eitz, but with an Aleph. Now we said Eitz with an ayin means ayin tzadik. Look and you'll see the tzadik. Aleph tzadik means learn and you'll see a tzadik. Aleph means to learn. Aleph bina, right? La'aleith in modern Hebrew means to train an animal. Iluf, right? Means to train. So learning is what's it called, is in the Gemara all the time, le'aleith, yalfinon. Aleph means to learn. So the Ilan becomes Aleph Tzadik. Learn about the fruit-bearing qualities of the tree, and you'll see a tzaddik. Now, how does the fruit tell you about a tzaddik? So we once discussed this at great length. I'm going to condense it. And that's the following. How does fruit tell you about a tzaddik? Look at fruit, you'll see a tzaddik. To illustrate it, there's a medrash that says the following. Before Lech Lecha, before God commanded Avram to go to Eretz Yisrael, Avram made a pilot trip on his own. And he took a world tour to try to find a place that when God will bless him with children. Oh, thank you. He wanted to find a place that when God will bless him with children, that's the place he would settle. So he went looking around for places. So the Medrash says he came to Aram Naharaim in Chutz Laretz, and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers eating and drinking and partying, and he said, God, this isn't the place I want for my children. Then he came to Eretz Yisrael, and he saw a bunch of idol worshippers planting and plowing and harvesting. He said, this is the place I want for my children. Now on the surface, seems a little difficult. What was the big difference between a bunch of idol worshippers eating, drinking, and partying, and a bunch of idol worshippers planting, plowing? They're still idol worshippers. And they weren't big tzaddikim. They both were idol worshippers. What's the difference between an idol worshipper who's a farmer and an idol worshipper who's a party goat? Right? And we could say, if I come from a moshav, so I could say that, you know, the purpose of Judaism is agriculture and whatever, and being a farmer, and we have Shloshes Rei Karin, maybe you spell it with an aleph, not with an ayin. We have 13 farmers that are the foundation of Judaism. In any case, so that's obviously not the case. So what did Avraham Avinu see that impressed him? The idea is the following, huh?
Delayed gratification.
Oh, exactly. The idea is the following. We've spoken about this in great length before. There are two philosophies to life. What's life in this world all about? One philosophy is eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Enjoy yourself. The one who has the most toys, when he dies, wins. Pleasure. Enjoy yourself in this world. You're born, you die, have pleasure. That's Esav. Esav is everything's finished. Esav wants immediate gratification. He's a hunter. Wants to go in the forest, shoot an animal, eat it. Finish. Everything immediate. Awesome. Esav. Okay? Give me that stuff to eat. Pour it down my throat. What do I need? A bechora? That's in the future. I want it right now. Yaakov is v'hoya ekev. What's going to be in the end? Yaakov Avinu was a shepherd, according to the simple meaning of the psukim. A shepherd is willing to put in a lot of work now for a future goal. That's the difference between Esav and Yaakov. Esav wants immediate gratification. Yaakov is willing to put in work now for the future goal. The Meiri says that Olam Haba is the fruit of this world. This world, you plant and plow and make this and plant the seeds, and you reap the fruit in the next world. Not two different worlds. Here you create the next world by putting in the work here for a future goal. This is not a world of enjoyment. You can enjoy the world, but you enjoy preparing for the world to come, not that the end result, this world is an end in itself. It's a means to reach an end. That's why the Olam Haba is the fruit, and this is the place where you prepare that fruit. Okay. That's what Avraham Avinu saw. Avraham Avinu saw that in Chutz La'aretz, the environment is conducive to the philosophy of immediate gratification. Eat, drink, and be merry. But in Eretz Yisrael, even for idol worshippers, the environment is conducive for putting in work now for the future. For them, the future was getting their fruit. But if my children will be in this land, it will be conducive for them to live a life where you put in effort now for a future benefit. The future will be Olam Haba. My children will take it to its full extent. These idol worshippers, and you can see that. Even the non-frum chalutzim that came here, you know, in the early 1900s, they weren't looking for immediate gratification. They weren't looking to enjoy themselves. They drained the swamps, and they were looking to build up a country for the future, for future generations. They weren't looking for immediate gratification. Now, she'ain ken in Chutz La'aretz, a lot of people who came to America were looking to strike it rich right away. They weren't interested so much in putting in effort for the future. They wanted to get the gold off the streets. That's what they came for. They knew there weren't any gold on the streets. There were malaria swamps to drain. They came anyway. different kind of what once hit me very much, this difference between here and Chutz Laretz. They used to have Shavua HaSefer, much different than it is today. Now Shavua HaSefer, you can hold this HaSefer, and it's all in the bookstores. But they used to bring to the center of the city, in Yerushalayim, it was in Gan HaPa'amon at those days. I'm sure in Netanya there was a place they brought it to the Kikar,
yeah.
Right? And they brought people, all the publishers brought out their books, Svarim and books or whatever, and it was a night out. Family went out, and they perused all these books that they were on sale, and the publishers were trying to get rid of the books they couldn't get rid of, you know, all the time, and whatever. And they had cotton candy for the children and rides or whatever. It was a night out with the family. And you went out, and you went around looking to buy books to see what was new, what was old, or whatever. And the kids had a good time. Mama said, this was one year, I took my family to Shavua Sefer in Gan HaPa'amon in Yerushalayim. And they didn't have it in Matit Yahu for some reason, I don't know why. In any case, but they had it in Yerushalayim. And we took my family there. And I had to leave to Chutz Laretz that night. I had a 1 o'clock flight. So we went out, came home, went to the airport, and in 11 hours I was in New York. Get off the plane in New York. And the guy who met me says, there's something going on today in Javits Convention Center. Maybe you'd like to go. I have tickets. Would you like to go? I said, what is it? He said, it's Kosher Food Fest. I said, what is that? He said, all the producers of kosher food bring their, what's it called, latest products to Javits Convention Center. Hundreds and hundreds of people and products. And people walk around the tables, they get free food, and they look to get to see what's being produced or whatever. It's an interesting thing. I said to myself, I just left Eretz Yisrael a few hours ago. People walking around tables looking at Sparta. Now I come to America, right, and they want me to go to a place where people are walking around tables looking at food. There's got to be a message over here. Right? Not that I have anything against food, you can see, nothing against food. Especially kosher food, fine. Right? But that should be the focus. People come out for a night to walk around tables looking at food and tasting it. That's the focus of the evening. And in Eretz Yisrael, the focus of the evening is looking at Sfarim. Got to be a difference between what the focus of life is. And then, after that, I didn't go to myself. I told the guy I have other things to do. In any case, I went home to eat. Yeah, then I saw in a newspaper, I think in the Jewish Press, they had a number for a kashrus hotline, 24-hour hotline. Call this number, and somebody is manning the telephone all the time if you have a kashrus question. Now, I could understand a suicide hotline, right? You can't tell a person, well, if you want to commit suicide, wait till 7 o'clock in the morning and give us a call, right? You need it 24 hours. I could see other halachas, maybe, that you must know, right? The medical hotline, if somebody needs to be connected to a heart-lung machine or not, 24 hours. But a kashrus hotline? You wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, go to the refrigerator, you see, I don't know if this hatchet is good or not. So you got to call this number at 3 o'clock in the morning so you can eat. Wait till 8 o'clock in the morning, call your rabbi. Right? What is the emergency? You have to know at 3 o'clock in the morning. If you can eat the thing, don't eat it. But it's got to be the Chutz La'aretz is the focus. Right? Not that you can't go against it, but the focus is eat, drink, and be merry. And there are beautiful kehilas in Chutz La'aretz, but you have to fight against the environmental influence. Here, you can go against the environmental influence too, and you can live a really miserable Torah life here. Anti-Torah life. But you have to fight against the influence here is put in work for the future. There, it's immediate gratification. You can fight the influences in both places, and many people do. But here, if you want to do what's right, the environment helps you. There, if you want to do what's wrong, the environment helps you. That's the difference. That's what Avraham Avinu saw. So fruit represents Olam Haba. Learn about the fruit-giving qualities of a tree, Ilan, Aleph, Tzadik, and you'll know what a Tzadik is. A Tzadik is a person who's willing to wait for the fruit and put in effort now to get that fruit, and not immediate gratification. Now, when it comes, therefore, to the fruit in Eretz Yisrael, the fruit is symbolic of Olam Haba, of really serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what fruit represents. So therefore, the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us mitzvahs to do with the fruit so it can bring this message home. And there are basically four different kinds of mitzvahs. There's Truma, there's Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, and Maaser Ani. Those are the four basic mitzvahs to do with fruit. Okay, there's others, Bikurim, whatever, but these are the four basic Trumas and Maasers. What are they? Truma, you take any amount, the first. Truma is called the first. You take the first of your crop, and rabbinically it's either 1/40th or 1/50th or 1/60th, depending how stingy or generous you are, right? So 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th, but from the Torah, even one grain is enough. The main thing is you gave the first to the Kohen. You dedicated the first. Why is the first important? Because the first set the pattern for everything that comes afterwards. Right? The first isn't necessarily the best, but it's the foundation. It's the root of everything that comes after. That's why firsts are dedicated to God. Not necessarily because they're the best. I'm a firstborn. I can believe that first is the best. Anybody here who's a firstborn could agree with me. But if you're not the firstborn, you probably don't agree with me. Okay? And you're probably right in other situations, not my situation, but in other situations, right, the first is not necessarily the best. So why does God want the first? Why does he want the best? Because the first sets the pattern. It's the root and foundation of everything that comes after. So when you make a statement, the first goes to God, that means that my purpose in this world is service to God, not filling my stomach. That's the first. That's Truma. Then comes Maaser. Maaser is the tenth. You give the tenth to God. Truma is the first. Maaser is the purpose, the goal. Why is the number 10 represent the goal? Because until 10, every number is separate. Separate number to itself. 3, 4, 5, so. When you get to 10, it makes one unit of all the numbers before. It now becomes a unit of tens. And the next number is Achadesre. You keep that unit of tens and you add to it another one. In Arabic numerals, it's one unit of tens and zero ones. That's a decimal system. The Maral says, therefore the number 10 represents Achdus, total unity. God created the world, he was one. Then he made a lot of things. The goal is that all those many things should unite under God's unity and again become one. That's the number 10. That's why, right. That's why 10 always represents a lot of things, but all one unity. 10 Makos and 10 Dibros and the 10 Mamoros, they all represent being unified under God. Many things, but they're all one unity. They're one unit of 10, and that's why a minion is 10. Because a minion is a community. Community. It's a unity, right? A 10 creates that unity. It's now not individuals anymore. It's one unit. It's a unified unit made of many different things. That's the number 10. So we dedicate the first to God, that's Truma. And then we say that the goal of everything is that everything should be dedicated to God and unite under him, that's Maaser Rishon. That's the 10. Then there's Maaser Sheni. Okay, fine. So now, conceptually, I believe that the beginning goes to God and the goal is to God and everything in the middle, but that's very nice to believe that, but you have to be able to put it into practice. So what do you have to do to put it into practice? Learn. Learn Torah so you'll know how to put it into practice. That's Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni, you bring to Yerushalayim and eat it there. And the Torah says the purpose of Maaser Sheni is Leman Tilmad L'Yiras Hashem Elokecha. In order you should learn to fear God. Now how do you learn to fear God? By eating your Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. So Tosfos says, because what was in Yerushalayim? The Beis HaMikdash, with all the Kohanim and Leviim who were serving there. The Sanhedrin, so all the big Talmidei Chachamim were in Yerushalayim. All the yeshivas were in Yerushalayim because Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah. So when you had to eat your Maaser in Yerushalayim, you couldn't do it in one day. You had to stay there for a while. So you stopped into this yeshiva, you saw this gavul, you saw the Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash, and you were inspired and learned from them how to serve God. So Truma sets the foundation. Maaser sets the goal. Now you have the conception. How do you put it into practice? Learn. That's Maaser Sheni. Go to Yerushalayim and learn.
Year 3 and 6?
Right, that's year 1, 2, and 4, and 5. 3 and 6 is Maaser Ani. In the off years, in the third year of the Shemitah cycle, in the sixth year, instead of Maaser Sheni, you gave Maaser Ani, he gave to the poor. Why? Because all of this is for you. You dedicate your first. You dedicate the tenth. You learn. But you can't just worry about yourself. You have to worry about other people too. So, two out of the 7 years, give it to the aniyim, give it to the poor people, and worry about them too. Worry about somebody else, not just yourself. Those are the four mitzvahs that have to do with fruit. Again, the fruit represents this world is a preparation for the next world. Like you plant the seeds, you prune and plow and fertilize, and you reap the benefit in the next world. That's the fruit. In order to hit that message home, the Torah gave us four basic mitzvahs to do with fruit in Eretz Yisrael. Truma, dedicate the first to God, set off the pattern, the foundation, dedicate the gold, the tenth, to God, so that now everything in between is also has to be used somehow in God's service. Learn how to do that by Maaseh Sheni, and also give to the ani, give to others. Like, care about other people, not just your own betterment in this world and the next world. Give to the ani too. Take care of him. Okay. If you had to choose letters, this is the punchline. If you had to choose letters to represent these mitzvahs, let's see what letters and the aliphbet would represent these different mitzvahs. Truma, you want to give the first. What letter would represent giving the first to God? Aleph. Yeah? Maaseh Rishon, you want to give the tenth. The goal, the tenth, to God. What letter would represent that? Yud. You want to learn about Torah and how to implement this. Laman Tilmad. What letter in the aliphbet represents learning? Lama. And you want to give to the Ani. The Ani is a person who can't support himself. He's fallen. It says the Nun in the Aliphate represents Nephila, fallen. That's why the central letter of Ani is a Nun. And what's after the Nun? Sama. Someh Hashem l'chol anoflim. God supports those that fall. But the Nun is the guy who falls, and the Samah is the support. So Nun represents somebody who can't support himself, and you help to support him. That's the Ani. So that would be the letter that represents giving Maaseh Ani. Nun. What does that spell? Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun. That's Ilan. So Ilan is the Aleph Tzadik, if you put those three letters together. Learn about the fruit, and you'll see a Tzadik. How do you learn about the fruit? Learn what Eretz Yisrael is different than Chutz Laaretz, and the mitzvahs that have to do with the fruit. And those mitzvahs, type of spell, Ilan, Aleph, Yud, Lamed, Nun. Aleph is Truma, Yud is Maaseh Rishon, Lamed is Maaseh Sheni, Nun is Maaseh Ani. And that's what Tu B'Shvat is all about. Tu B'Shvat is preparing for the Rosh Hashanah of mercy. God wants us not to totally subjugate ourselves and burn ourselves on an altar. That's justice. He wants to give us mercy so we can be dynamic. We can be productive. Right? So production is through the water of Torah. Because he wants us to bear our fruits. So the way to prepare for that is to understand how to work in this world with the right intention, that you're working towards a goal, not for immediate gratification, but for a goal. And by looking at the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, you understand that. And by doing the mitzvahs, it gives you the understanding of how to implement that. And that's what Tu B'Shvat prepares for the Rosh Hashanah of Nisan, which is Rachamim, which is Pesach. Something to think about.